They're talking about doing like a personal scanning code. So everybody remember Minority Report? You know, Tom Cruise gets his eyes replaced and he walks into a store and it like scans his eyes and gets personal ads right for that person, you know, right for their prior shopping history or things that might interest them. That's what they're talking about doing with nutrition recommendations. You know, based on your age, your fitness level, your, you know, injury history, your genes, whatever reasons they can come up with, they want to base recommendations on all those things. So some people say, that sounds awesome. It's like personalized nutrition healthcare, right? Other people think that's an invasion of privacy. One, you know, who is actually providing these recommendations? Who's determining what my needs actually are? So there's a lot of room for, you know, big corporation involvement, right? Then you have nanotechnology. They're talking about putting the flu vaccine in milk. Someone with this nanotechnology, they can make it like, you know, insanely small, combine it with the milk, because the idea is, you know, the flu kills a lot of elderly people and hurts a lot of babies every year. For people our age, it's usually not a big deal. But they think if people aren't going to get their flu shot, we'll put it in the milk. Everyone's get their flu vaccine. No one has to come in. Think of how much time that will save. No one has to come in and get their flu shot. It's just built right into the milk. It's a little scary to me, right? They're talking about making an indigestible fat substitute. So ever remember like the Olean potato chips? Right, the Olestra, you know, gave you the shits? Those? Yeah, this is nothing like that. Okay, this is supposed to be completely indigestible, pass right through your GI tract undone, but that was supposed to be the same thing with Olestra, right? They thought it's not going to bother anybody, but people ate a lot more potato chips in one sitting than they realized, and there were problems. So it might work out great, but it just strikes me as you're just continuing a bad habit, right? You're just keeping things going that you don't want. They're creating hot dogs with omega-3s. They're actually replacing the saturated fats in hot dogs with like a fish oil gelatin. Okay, so to have like the same mouthfeel and texture, they're further along on this than you might think. This is going to hit the market probably next year. So they're really working on this. They've already created, they're just kind of perfecting the mouthfeel and the texture and the taste. So that comes out a little rubbery, so they're really working on that. But they're saying 2013, this is going to be out there. So I don't know about you, but I don't really want my clients thinking they can have a hot dog to get their fish oil. And there are a lot of other problems with hot dogs besides its saturated fat content. They're talking about making plant-based meat substitutes, like far beyond black bean burgers. And there's not a lot of information on this one. It's kind of like a patented process, and the company's not really telling anybody about it, what they're doing. But it's some type of combination of different plant proteins supposed to be completely indistinguishable from meat. Same taste, same flavor, same aroma. Supposed to be the exact same thing. That doesn't sound too scary, right? However, not everybody believes this can actually happen. Not everyone believes you can make a delicious burger out of plants. So what they've done, they've created beef from stem cells. This has already happened. This is going to hit the market in like 2 years. They've got beef that they can grow in a test tube, okay, and they can make a burger out of it. They take a little cell, put it in a test tube, make a muscle, they can make a burger. So the cool thing about this is, they say it can decrease the amount of livestock on the earth by a factor of a million. So we'd go from a population of like 10 billion livestock to about 10,000. And livestock take up a huge amount of resources, and we'll get into that further. I'm getting a little ahead of myself with that one. But it can be a big deal in that regard. And they also say with this strategy or with this technology, they can make a burger out of pretty much anything. Panda, zebra, dinosaur if we can get the DNA, anything at all. So it's kind of interesting, right? And they can alter the fatty acid profile in different ways because they're growing it. They can kind of decide what they want it to be. They can make the fatty acid profile healthier and make it more like an avocado. They can do all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's interesting, right? But it's also kind of, I prefer to get my burger from a cow eating grass and in sunshine and drinking water, not grown in a lab. But this is what they're planning. This is what they're doing. Okay. Some other stuff, maybe not so scary, but a little more interesting. They're talking about increasing consumption of what they call mini livestock, which is just code word for insects. Right? It's just like how they renamed plums, dried plums. They used to call them prunes. Now they call them dried plums. Because prunes were like the Buick of fruit, right? Only old people ate prunes. But now, you know, they're actually growing in their popularity because they've remarketed it. So that's what they're trying to do here from the get-go. Okay, but insects are actually eaten pretty widely around the world. You know, if you've seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, you know, they're eating the insects and the chilled monkey brains. And Kate Capshaw, like the woman in the movie, has like this utter look of disgust. That's how most of you just looked at me when I talked about eating insects. But this is not abnormal. In a lot of other cultures, it's a normal part of the cuisine. And then even in some parts of the U.S., like more adventurous restaurants, they're starting to do this already. Why? Because insects are really high in protein. They have much protein and as much iron as beef. They have more calcium, they have other vitamins and minerals, and they're way less resource intensive. They have way less greenhouse gas emissions, much smaller carbon footprint, require less land and water, so they can feed a bigger population. So it sounds gross, but it's not scary, I guess, right? They're talking about farming algae. So this is an artist, like a futuristic depiction of what an algae farm might look like. So why would we grow algae? Anybody have a guess? What was that?
Phytonutrients.
Phytonutrients, it's a good answer. Yeah?
Good source of DHA.
Good source of omega-3s, exactly. Anybody else? And you can grow it in the ocean. Great point. These are some of the big things about algae, right? It's a good source of protein, plant protein like spirulina, which is like a popular protein source these days. Good source of omega-3s, like algal oil, people, vegetarians get their omega-3s from algae, and it can grow it in the ocean. That's a huge deal, because we have very limited water and land resources left for growing food. So the fact that you can grow this in the ocean, you're not utilizing those precious resources. So it can be grown really easily. It was first actually researched by NASA for use with astronauts because it's so nutrient dense, and it contains a lot of essential nutrients, vitamins, minerals, vitamin B12. It's a plant source of vitamin B12, and there aren't really any of those. So it can be really helpful for vegetarians and vegans that way. Okay, they can use it in place of fossil fuels. They can use it in place of salt in food. It has a lot of utility, and it's super, super efficient. So pretty interesting stuff. I don't know if I really want to eat algae, but they're going to find ways to kind of sneak it in the diet because it can use a lot less stuff. So the question becomes, why are we planting all this? And I've kind of sprinkled it in throughout, so I'm sure you've kind of figured some of that out. But what do you guys think? What's the reason why they're planting all this stuff? Why are we trying to use less resources? So the first one is climate change, right? Drought is the number one limiting factor to agriculture worldwide. In 2012, we had the worst drought we've had since the 1950s. 20 years ago, our crops would have been devastated. We would have been screwed, okay? So this was a big deal. The corn that they're working on, it's being bred and engineered to have bigger roots and absorb water more efficiently and bounce back. They'd already started that, but now they're really pushing for it because we're having hotter and drier summers, growing seasons are more difficult to manage, and it's been hurting crops. So they're trying to find ways around it. So climate change is a big deal, right? It also really affected cattle populations this year, which is why they're really working on breeding programs with African cows, because they're more drought tolerant, more heat resistant. And to be honest, they're probably gonna start modifying cows at some point. It's probably inevitable because things are changing, okay? So climate change is a big deal. Sustainability, right? Our current methods of production and consumption are not sustainable. Livestock take up about 30% of the arable land in the world. That's pasture for livestock, growing crops for livestock, and they take up a humongous amount of the earth to feed us meat, okay, and milk, but generally for meat. 1 4-ounce burger requires as much water as running your bathroom sink for 24 hours a day for an entire week, for 1 4-ounce burger. They produce more greenhouse gas emissions than all the automobiles on the earth combined. And I'm not saying this to bag on meat. I love dead animal flesh as much as Tony does. But we can't, we can't sustain it. We can't keep eating this way. And with growing population and with developing countries having an increased demand for meat, prices are gonna soar. We're gonna meet that production because people are gonna make money from it. So they're gonna keep producing. You know, over like half of the rainforests in the Amazon have been clear cut for cattle. So it's a big deal. We need to find alternatives. And you can get into things like soil erosion from crop monoculture, the fact that our genetically modified crops today, we have very few varieties because we do a lot of it, but we have very, very few varieties. And so if something evolves that can, say, hurt a variety, we're in big trouble. So they're working on that. They're creating, engineering other varieties to have more diversity so that we're less susceptible to stuff like that. But our current methods of production and consumption, we just can't sustain. We have a growing population, as someone noted. By the year 2050, they expect the Earth to have about 9 billion people on it. So as much as I love biodynamic and organic growing, and I would love it if we could all feed ourselves, you know, and eat locally, that's likely not going to feed the world, okay? How is Rio de Janeiro with 30 million people, how are they going to eat locally? You know, how many farms are they going to need? How much farmland would that require, you know, with a traditional farm setup? Way more than we could possibly ever imagine to feed that kind of population. So with a growing population, increasing demand for meat, we need alternatives, right? Just makes sense. Then there's the argument of, well, we want to improve global health, right? This one's a little sketchy. Sometimes it's true, sometimes maybe not so much, right? We do some things, like we added iodine to salt years ago. Did that help the population? I'd say so. We have a far less incidence of iodine deficiency, right? But then you can get into, is adding a flu vaccine to milk going to improve the health of the population? Maybe, maybe not. You know, there are certainly questionable things. But generally, it can, not always the case. Genetically modified crops, do they help the health of the population? Debatable, right? Depends on who you ask. So in that same vein, though, imagine you're a starving child in Africa, okay? You're vitamin A deficient because your diet's deficient and all kinds of things. You're possibly going to go blind from it. You might even die. If there was a readily consumed food that was engineered to provide vitamin A to prevent that deficiency, would you eat it? You know I would, right? I would rather choose eating a genetically modified crop that's going to prevent me from dying than to choose to not eat it, go blind, and die, right? About 500,000 kids every year in Africa go blind from vitamin A deficiency, and about half of them will die within 1 year from that deficiency. That's a big deal, right? So a genetically modified crop could help a lot of people. And they've created this. They have this thing called golden rice, which you can see. It's been biosynthesized and engineered to create, but it creates beta carotene. But they created it in about the year 2000 with a better version in the year 2005, but it's not on the market yet. It has actually not gotten to Africa. And it's been on the market for 12 years. And why is that? So we have global activists, and we have anti-genetically modified crop people who have prevented it, who have really worked to lobby against it, and understandably so, because they believe, one, Africa's like big pharmaceutical, you know, testing ground, which isn't necessarily wrong. And two, they think it's Pandora's box. Once you allow one genetically modified crop in Africa, you're going to allow them all in Africa. It's going to be this huge flood, and they're going to do whatever the heck they want in there because there's very little regulation. So they have some legit concerns. However, 500,000 kids every year are going blind. I mean, it's certainly a trade-off, right? But at the same time, I mean, if you can prevent, you know, 250,000 deaths a year from one thing, that's pretty easy in my book. You know, to me, it just makes sense. And the idea is, this is actually allegedly going to hit the market in 2013 because of support by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Helen Keller International. It only takes one cup of golden rice per day to give you about half of your vitamin A needs. Just one cup would probably save the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. So one of those instances where I think a genetically modified crop can help the population. So to segue into the next part, is any of this even remotely healthy? I think in my opinion, yeah, you know, golden rice can be, but it's also context dependent. Do we need golden rice? Is anybody here deficient in vitamin A? Probably not, right? Is it going to help your health or my health or your health? Unlikely. But is it going to help the health of someone in Africa who's, you know, going blind from deficiency? Sure. So a lot of this stuff, it depends, right? It depends on who you're asking. It depends on who it's for.